All right, we're going to go ahead and get started so that we can get you all out of here. That's loud, isn't it? I guess empty rooms, it echoes a little bit more. So thank you for hanging around for the last presentation of the day. This is my third VM World, and I always get the last presentation of the day. I don't know why. I guess they just like me that way. So my name is Mike Cipitrello. I've been a systems engineer with VMware for about 4.5 years. So this presentation is about scaling your virtual infrastructure, about your people, your processes, and about your technology. Really how you scale out an environment and grow from maybe a small customer to a medium customer, a medium customer to an enterprise, you know, larger customer, or maybe just to one of those people that are completely nuts. So let's go ahead and click through this. I ask you, if you want to, you can ask questions during the presentation. Just raise your hand, we'll shout out, and I'll repeat the questions. Otherwise, you can hold them till the end. This presentation lasts about 45 minutes, and so we have plenty of time for Q&A at the end. So the key thing here is customers do grow, right? I've been to plenty of customers, and they're like, oh, we only have 5 servers, and we're going to do server consolidation in our environment. So we're going to go ahead and consolidate those things down, and we're not ever going to really grow beyond that. I mean, that's, you know, really our thing. Like small churches, for example, they buy this stuff, consolidate all their servers, and they're never going to grow. But the point is, you do grow. Those customers come back, they end up growing, they end up expanding inside of their environment. So you might go something from a simple environment where you might have just virtual center and you might have ESX in your environment, and then you want to figure out how do I grow or how do I plan for the growth to adding more networks, to adding shared storage inside of my environment. What are some of the things that I need to watch out for in that environment? What are some of the things I need to plan for going forward? And then you might go towards more of an advanced architecture where you have consolidated backup in the picture at this point in time, and how do I implement that, and how do I cluster my license server and my virtual center server, and what are some of the things I need to watch out for? The key thing is don't do short-term planning, right? You might plan for today and say, oh, I'm not worried about consolidated backup. I've got a backup plan in place today. I'm not worried about any of this VLAN tagging or anything like that. But you really do need to look at those things today, because implementing them in the future or going back and retrofitting them in the future may take a long point in time. And we'll get to that during the presentation. Plan for growth on storage, networking, and memory. So you might buy servers today that small form factor servers, 1U, 2U servers in your environment, 2 gigs of memory, you know, very small scalability inside of your servers. You might want to rethink that architecture. Maybe buy 4 CPU servers. I've actually had customers that buy 4 CPU servers but only put 2 CPUs in there because they still want to run a 2 CPU architecture, but they buy the bigger form factor with more PCI slots in there, more slots for memory so they can buy the cheaper memory, maybe the 2 gig DIMMs instead of cramming 4 gig DIMMs in the smaller form factor servers. So plan for that growth. Break stuff up into logical units, right? You don't want to have just one monolithic environment for your entire organization. Even if your organization is small today, go ahead and break it up using resource pools and clusters and say, I'm going to have pieces for the admin group, I'm going to have pieces for finance, I'm going to have pieces for HR, and go ahead and architect that today. Because again, going back and retrofitting this stuff can be very, very time consuming and cost you a lot of money. And think about an adaptive environment. Think about having an environment that can grow as you go along. Maybe you're looking for shared storage, and you decide, okay, this shared storage, it's very inexpensive for me. It suits my needs today. But then going forward, maybe to add storage to that, you need to buy a whole other array, and you need to put in that array, and that array doesn't talk to the first array. So think about an adaptive environment that you can scale easily, that you can add components to easily. So let's start by looking at the technology that has an impact on this scalable environment. So there's different parts of your environment that are going to scale at different rates. You have your ESX servers. They're going to basically scale depending upon how many virtual machines you have, the workload of those different virtual machines. The virtual machines first, a little backwards here. Then you have your ESX servers that are going to scale according to those virtual machines, like we said. You're going to have your storage that scales with that, or hopefully scales with that. And you need to figure out, do I do internal storage, you know, NAS, iSCSI, fiber channel? We'll get into that. You have your different network components. How do you scale your networking? You know, do you do VLAN tagging? How do I worry about load balancing and failover? What are some of the gotchas? And then you need to worry about the management. Now, Virtual Center isn't the only management piece that's out there. You might have management components in-house today. You might be an HP or an IBM or a Dell or a Fujitsu, you know, customer, somebody like that. And they have their management components. So think about gluing that in to the virtual center pieces as well. So let's start by sizing a virtual machine. When you size a virtual machine, there's different things that you have to worry about. And one of the first things, or the biggest things, is how big do I make that virtual disk? Right? We're used to customers going out, or you know, internal customers, internal users, requesting a server and saying, I need a new database server, or I need a new web server, and I need a 50 gigabyte hard drive. So you go out and you provision them 50 gigs of space, or you buy a server with 50 gigabytes of a hard drive, and you look around and they're actually using 1 meg of a hard drive, right? They've put like a shared file on there or something like that. So remember that in a virtual environment, disks can grow. So even though you create a new virtual disk and it's a monolithic disk, I create a 10 gig hard drive, it sits there with 10 gigs, I can go back later, shut down that virtual machine, use the command line option to go ahead and increase the size of that disk, power it back up, and then expand that disk using like partition magic or disk management or dynamic disks inside of Windows. So you can grow your disks. You can also shrink your disks. Now I put a little asterisk next to this because that same command that we use, the vmkfs tools command, you can use it with a dash capital F and shrink the size of the disk. Now be careful with that because we simply lop off the end of the disk that you decided to shrink without checking for data. So you can really bite yourself and shoot yourself in the foot if you do that. So it's easier to grow the disk than it is to shrink the disk. So don't worry about, I'm going to go ahead and just create that 50 gig disk. Really maybe give them 10 gigs to start off, and then grow them to 30 gigs, and then grow them up to 50 gigs. That way you're not running out of all your shared storage and using that expensive disk. Memory can also always be adjusted. And remember that VMs don't always use all the memory that you need. Now, a best practice when you're sizing these virtual machines based on your physical servers is to say, okay, my physical server had 2 gigs of memory. I'm going to go ahead and make my virtual machine have 2 gigs of memory at that point in time. That's all well and good, and ESX does a very good job with transparent page sharing on shrinking down that amount of memory. So the virtual machine will actually use maybe, you know, a gig of physical memory or 100 megs of physical memory instead of that full 2 gigs of memory that it has, even though the virtual machine still thinks it has 2 gigs of memory. So memory is one of those dynamic things that can always be adjusted up or down. So to start off with, size your physical servers, create virtual machines with the same amount of memory, but then monitor that memory and shrink it down to where the guest actually is supposed to be. Only use SMP apps when you have an SMP workload. Now it's the end of the day, so I can't really say go down to the performance lab, but in the performance lab, if you want to download that manual online, we talk about how to see if an SMP app or an SMP VM is really useful. And we monitor this thing called CPU wait time. And we look at it and we say, okay, if the wait time is unbalanced, that means one of your CPUs from this SMP application is not really doing anything. Most applications are uniprocessor workloads. So if we go about creating SMP VMs, well, that's all well and good. We might have some wasted CPU cycles, but they also might degrade the performance on your overall box. Because let's say we have a 2 CPU physical server, and I have a 2 CPU virtual machine that starts running on it. So it's using both processors of our physical box. And now I have a uniprocessor virtual machine that comes along. Well, it can't run. It's ready to run. It wants to run. But both processors are being taken up. So this is impacting the performance of the uniprocessor application that we have because it can't get on the box. We move forward, and we put the uniprocessor VM on there. And now we have a dual processor VM that's next in line. Well, the uniprocessor app is executing, taking one of the CPUs. The dual CPU VM is next in line, but it can't get both CPUs. Again, it's ready to run, it wants to run, but it can't run. So again, you're impacting the performance of your SMP app, and at the same time, you have idle cycles in your box. You have one of those physical CPUs that could have been doing something. So just watch how you mix uniprocessor and multiprocessor workloads in your environment. And this is where, when we start to get to choosing your hardware on the next slide, that the dual-core and multi-core technology really comes into play. So let's talk about hardware. Hardware is one of those things that, you know, we're going through a server consolidation project. Do I go ahead and buy new fancy hardware? How big do I make the box? How small do I make the box? Start off by beefing up what you have. You don't have to go out necessarily and buy brand new boxes. You might have stuff in your environment that just by adding a little bit more memory or more network cards, you can scale that up and be a very, very good ESX host inside of your environment. However, if you're out of host or you want to buy new host, this is sort of my short shopping list. I'd start by finding a server that has 64-bit technology because that will scale with you better. A lot of applications, a lot of operating systems are going 64-bit, and even if you're not using those new applications, the other side benefit is that 64-bit has much, much faster memory access. Right, you have a much bigger pipe, a much shorter pipe in most circumstances to the memory. And anything that you can do in your environment to speed up access to memory or speed up, you know, the moving back and forth from memory will greatly improve the performance of your virtual machines, which will also greatly increase your scale. If you're running a 32-bit box right next to a 64-bit box, you'll be able to get very many more virtual machines on the 64-bit box. Also increase the amount of memory. Memory is going to be king in any virtualization environment that you use. The more memory you have in the box, the better the box is going to be. But then again, watch it. Watch the transparent page sharing that's going on and monitor those memory resources. You might find that, okay, I don't need to buy a four-way box with 64 gigs of memory. I might be able to get away with 16 gigs of memory. So I've saved a lot. I've left those extra slots inside the box so that I can continue to scale up inside the future. Also worry about expansion slots. This goes back to that small form factor box versus the larger form factor box. With the larger form factor box, you get more PCI slots in there so that you can put more HDAs in for redundancy, so you can put more network cards in for redundancy. Those small form factor boxes, while they're nice, may not give you that expandability and that scalability that you need. So the question was, do I find that InfiniBand is making that slot count fairly new? It will when we support InfiniBand, obviously, so we don't support InfiniBand currently in the current architecture. That's coming down the road. And when InfiniBand does come and 10 gig Ethernet comes and stuff like that, that does reduce the amount of network cards that you need if you're doing VLAN tagging and such like that. So yes, it will decrease the slot count that you need when that technology and our technology actually merge together and are available. The other thing I'd look for is dual-core or quad-core boxes. So this is where you can get a lot of CPU bang in a smaller form factor to increase that. The nice thing about that I like is that we still charge per socket. So you're getting two CPUs with a dual-core box. You got four CPUs that we'll leverage and we'll execute virtual machines on, so you don't get as much of that SMP-UP conflict, but we only charge you for two CPUs worth of workload. You move towards the quad-core boxes, and now you get a two CPU quad-core. We have eight cores inside of that box that we can execute on, and again, you don't need you only spend two CPUs worth of stuff. And then the last thing is on processor versus cache, right? Processor speed versus cache have always been on two opposite sides of the server selection guidelines. And as a server vendor, they usually come to you and say, we have the fastest processors, or we have the most cache on our processors, and that's usually what they lead with. The impact to VMware is kind of negligible. So from a scalability standpoint, you'll do well either way. I asked one of our co-founders and the guy who wrote our VM kernel, I said, which is better for us, faster processors or more cache? And he starts going off on this rampage on, here's this architecture and everything. I'm like, whoa, hey, hold on, dude. I'm on the systems engineering side. So the answer is more cache. Cache is always king, right? It's king in the regular world. It's king in a virtual world. So more cache will be better for you than processor speed. The next thing up is storage. So I kind of created this eye chart of a thing that turns out a little funky on the slides. But when selecting storage, you really have to figure out what's going to scale for my environment. I've had plenty of customers that have implemented on internal storage and have been very, very happy with that. But how well is that going to scale out in the future? I mean, we talk about, like a small church or a dentist's office or something like that that has just a few servers, or maybe your remote office locations. Does internal storage make sense? It might make sense in your particular instance. It depends what you want to do with it. And as we go across this chart, we look at, easy, high availability. Well, shared storage is really going to play a bigger role in that, because with just internal storage, I have to find out some way to replicate the disks back and forth. It's still doable, but it's not easy. So in this particular chart, I think I have a laser pointer in here somewhere. There we go. The low part of the graph down here means there's very little value. It's bad, right? Higher bars are good. So from an easiness standpoint, iSCSI and Fibre Channel are going to be much, much easier to do high availability with. We go across here, vMotion the same way. Consolidated backup, only Fibre Channel works with today. And then you look at the cost standpoint, Fibre Channel gets hit on the cost standpoint because it's more expensive. But overall, iSCSI or Fibre Channel is going to be a good selection from a shared storage standpoint. They got VMFS, they got the clustered file system, you have the advanced technology. So the whole point of this slide is to invest in shared storage now. Even if you think you're not going to use it, you're going to be fine with internal storage. If you go back and try and retrofit from your internal storage to a shared storage architecture, it's going to take a long period of time to do that transition. Another big thing on storage is how big do I make my volume? So once we have this storage, do I create one gigantic VMFS partition? Do I go ahead and split my VMFS partitions up? Is VMFS the way to go, or do I use raw disk mappings? So these are a lot of the questions that have actually been answered somewhat in the performance lab downstairs again. And the answer is, it depends. It depends on your environment, right? It's always better to create fewer LUNs because that's less SAN management that you have to do. So just go ahead and create one larger LUN rather than lots of little LUNs. But at the same time, if you split up your VMFS volumes, especially in Virtual Infrastructure 3, it'll provide you better throughput overall. Because if I have one VMFS partition in Virtual Infrastructure 3, I just get one disk work queue. So I get one pipe out of the box, essentially. If I split up those VMFS partitions in two VMFS partitions, then I get two disk work queues. So I get twice the amount of queues going out of the box, which will actually increase our scalability at that point in time and increase our performance inside of our environment. So splitting up your disk volumes will be better. Now on the back side of that, don't create an individual VMFS partition or an individual raw disk map for every single VM inside of your environment. Because the more LUNs that you create, the more memory that we use inside the VM kernel and the more heap space that we use, and you can actually decrease your performance. Because even though we have those disk work queues, we can't actually manage those disk work queues at that point in time, and so your performance will actually degrade. So even though we support up to 256 LUNs for an ESX server, don't create 256 LUNs for an ESX server. And the whole VMFS versus raw disk map thing, I was actually talking to one of our storage engineers that wrote this, that wrote the original file systems and raw disk maps and everything, and he said it was originally designed raw disk mappings to provide storage management, so if you need direct access to the storage to do for gateway LUNs or something like that to manage storage, that's what it was originally designed for. He said there should be no performance. And actually, the tests that we've run downstairs show that there is really very little performance difference between VMFS and raw disk maps. So don't go crazy creating raw disk maps because you're thinking you're getting better performance. If you have heavy write applications, then you might get a little bit better performance with raw disk maps. But from a scalability standpoint, they're much harder to manage than just creating one VMFS partition and then allowing people to create virtual machines on it. And then with Virtual Infrastructure 3, also remember to create your LUNs large enough so that you can put those extra files on it. So in VMFS 2, we just had the virtual disk stored out there on the shared storage volume. Now we have things that actually change in size. So not only do we have the virtual disk, but we have the swap file, which will change in size for that virtual machine. We have the configuration files, which are pretty static, but we also have the log files and the snapshots, which will grow in size. So you don't want to fill up your VMFS partitions, leave a little bit of space on there, and size them appropriately for these extra components that are on there. Any questions so far? All right. Actually, I think I already covered some of this. So on the left, we have kind of the benefits of raw disk maps, and on the right, we have sort of the benefits of VMFS, like kind of, you know, the raw versus cooked scenario there. The best mix is to use raw sparingly inside of your environment. So if you do have those heavy applications, or maybe you have an application that I want this particular virtual machine to be replicated, you know, every second, I want another virtual machine to be replicated every hour, you can split those up on different raw disk maps so that it's easier for your SAN or your iSCSI environment or whatever you have to replicate those environments at different intervals. And this goes back to actually, I should have blanked some of this out. This is not to mean QLogic and Emulex are bad versus against each other. But this is actually to mention that the drivers do use some amount of memory and some amount of heap space for every LUN that you create in your environment. So in our particular case, and this is an older chart, this is VMFS 2, so that's been expanded a little bit in VMFS 3, and the drivers take about the same amount of memory now. But as you add more LUNs, like here we have 4 paths and 30 LUNs at this point in time, and we've actually used up enough heap space to get below our magic threshold of about 7 megs. So we like about 7 megabytes inside the heap in order to manage all the different processes that are going on in the box. And if we run out of heap, it's like any operating system that runs out of memory at that point in time. We may just start killing random processes. We may swap out random processes. And so you may have performance degradation inside of your environment. Typically what we do is we just flush the disk queue all the time, and your disk performance starts going down the drain very, very quickly at that point. So just remember, don't create a lot of LUNs inside of your environment. Next up is networking. So networking is one of those things, and this is actually a picture from one of my customers. So this is where they didn't plan ahead for network scalability inside their environment. They started with just a couple of ESX servers, a couple of network ports at that point in time, and it was just connected in test and development. And then they started to roll it out and really expand this, and then they started using the same boxes for some production workloads and shared environment workloads. And so each network port that's on here is actually representing a different network inside of their environment. Rather than using VLAN tagging, they said, okay, this port up here is for VLAN 1, this port's for VLAN 2, this one's for VLAN 3, this one's for VLAN 4. And so you end up with 5 quad port network cards in there, and then you can't even add more HBAs to get to your SAN at that point in time. And so from a scalability standpoint, they had the larger form factor boxes, but they really couldn't scale out their network because they didn't plan ahead and implement VLAN technology early on. Now this customer has hundreds of ESX servers and thousands of virtual machines running inside of their environment, and to go back and retrofit VLAN technology inside of here is going to be very, very time consuming, because now we have to add more network ports so that we can VLAN tag these guys while the original network ports are actually serving customers, but we don't have the capacity in order to do that. So we have to add more boxes into our environment, demotion the stuff over to the new switching technology, redo the old stuff, unplug the old stuff, and it becomes a very time-consuming and very expensive process to go back and retrofit inside of your environment. So next up is the management server. So Virtual Center, again, scales inside of your environment. And it scales relatively well inside of your environment until you get to these large distributed environments. We have customers that run, you know, ESX servers all over the world and manage them from one virtual center. And what happens is bandwidth starts to become an issue. Even I have a customer down in the southeast that has 3,000 remote locations that they put ESX servers in, and they need to manage all these ESX servers under one virtual center server. And what we found is the bandwidth coming back into virtual center when we're collecting live stats actually exceeded the amount of bandwidth that they had coming into their data center. And so we had to split this apart, and now we have multiple virtual center servers managing the different environments. So we put them in each of the distribution centers, about 12 of these distribution centers, and they manage each of those environments. So it may come down to where you have to split up your virtual center environment. Hopefully that won't occur, because currently we don't have anything sort of like a federated environment where everything can be seen under one roof. At that point in time, they'd have 12 different virtual centers that they needed to manage. So this is really a scaling factor inside a virtual center. Another thing is template deployment. So we'll talk about template deployment in the processes section, really. But when we start creating templates, you may end up where you have two different sites. Like I have a customer that has one in Miami and in Atlanta. And between those two sites, they like to deploy the same amount of templates. So they have templates that they've built, but now they have to replicate those templates back and forth somehow, and there's no good way to replicate those templates, because Virtual Center has to re-register the templates every time you replicate it back up after you make changes. So think about where you're going to put your templates and really how you're going to distribute your templates going forward. You know, if you have a lot of remote locations, like we have a cruise line that's one of our customers, they simply can't put it over, you know, the pipe to the actual cruise boat. So they ship a DVD out there with their templates and just put them in the new templates inside the DVD drive of the physical server. So think about that when you're scaling forward. Are you going to create a different template for every environment, or are you going to just create one standard template that you can build your virtual machines off of? And then provide some redundancy. So as you start to scale up inside of your environment, think about how you're going to provide some redundancy for Virtual Center inside of your environment. If Virtual Center goes down, it's no big deal. You can still manage stuff by connecting directly to the ESX host. It just becomes more of a pain in the butt at that point in time. You have 200, 300 ESX hosts. Now I've got 200 or 300 client connections that I've got to manage at the same time. So Virtual Center is a clusterable service. So you can use standard Microsoft clustering services, Veritas clustering services, whatever you want to use inside of your environment to cluster that service and provide some high availability inside of the environment. But you need to plan ahead for that, because if you want to do that, then the database needs to be migrated to an external database and so forth. Oh, on a virtual platform itself? So the question was, what's the best practice for deploying Virtual Center in a virtual platform, like in a virtual machine, for example, right? Yeah, why don't you use our own high availability? You absolutely can do that. It depends upon the scale of your Virtual Center server, right? So now with Virtual Infrastructure 3, we support two-way and four-way, you know, SMP VMs. We support large memory and everything like that. And the memory was really the big thing. So virtual center inside of a virtual infrastructure works fine. You can use, you know, VMware HA. VMware HA works perfectly well without virtual center in the picture. You can take virtual center, completely shut it off. It'll actually fail over itself. Even though it's not supported, you can actually vMotion virtual center. So you can kick off a vMotion process and it'll vMotion itself, which is actually very, very nice inside of the environment. So it does provide a lot of availability inside of the environment. You know, if I were to do it over, I probably would do that, but you might want to cluster it again with a physical server. Because what happens if it goes down and, you know, now that ESX host that it's on is down, well, we could just manage that ESX host, but, you know, do I need to get that VM back up? How do I replicate it? Those type of issues. So replicating it back to a physical environment might work really well. Yeah, so yeah, I mean, from a best practice standpoint, we recommend, you know, deploy stuff that what's managing the environment outside of the environment that it's managing. Brad brings up an interesting point on, you know, if you had storage inside of your environment and you got into sort of what we call path thrashing issues, where a LUN is failing back and forth over from a you know, kind of a load balance standpoint, then how do you get in and manage the ESX host inside of that environment? Say it was thrashing between 10 different ESX hosts, so everybody has lost their storage, you're trying to manage that centralized storage, now you have to open up clients to each of those individual ESX servers. So in bad scenarios where you're trying to troubleshoot complex issues like that, having virtual center available might be, you know, a nice thing. So again, if you were to do it, I would say cluster it to something that's outside of the environment as well from a physical standpoint. Physical to virtual clustering is fully supported. It works just fine. So that shouldn't be an issue deploying it in that mechanism. But yeah, I mean, I've always been a fan of leveraging the technology. You know, you got HA there, you got DRS there. Everything works beautifully, but if it goes away, it's not so bad in a smaller environment, but scaling it out to a larger environment without virtual center is going to be a kind of a pain to troubleshoot and manage. The other thing is the license server. So new in VI3, we have this license server to worry about as well. So the license server can also be clustered, and it can also go down, but not for too long of a time. So if the license server disappears for more than 14 days, ESX server periodically checks back in to see if its licenses are still available, right? And it does this on a 14-day period. So if it goes down for too long at that point in time, ESX server checks back in, your virtual machines will still run. If it can't contact the license server, you'll still be able to be managed. You can still log in directly. But what happens is it turns off all the extra stuff, like it turns off DRS and HA and all the good things that you've licensed as sort of extras. Basically, your virtual machines are just kind of sitting there running in an unlicensed state. So think about availability for your license server, right? It doesn't need to be super high available, but think about a recovery option for it at least. So the next thing is about your database. I've had plenty of customers where I've gone into, and they started small, so they started on the standard, you know, Access database in the old days or the MSDE database that we use today, and they said, I'm just going to go next, finish. I got my MSDE database that's running there. It's scaled up with me so far, and now I have, you know, 100 ESX servers, and I can't get into virtual center. Virtual center is locking up, and it turns out, you know, the MSDE database just didn't scale at that point in time. It couldn't manage all that, all those pieces. So think about using an external database, an ODBC compliant external database like SQL Server or Oracle, for example, and implement that soon, so that you don't have to worry about trying to retrofit all that information back and forth between the two things. Also, do some database cleanup. Make good friends with your DBA that's inside of your environment. If you're like most customers, most of our customers are the server guys, right, or the operating system people. They don't know a lot of stuff about databases. So go out and make friends with your DBA and get them to roll up the logs inside of the database, keep it clean, because if it grows and all those transaction logs are sitting out there, it will slow down your virtual center access, and you might lose some performance data along the way. Organization is also key. So think about, again, breaking up your environment. You might have one environment and just hundreds of ESX servers in there eventually, or thousands of virtual machines, and it gets to be a real pain to manage if you don't start organizing it early. So remember that you cannot vMotion between data centers in your environment. So you create a data center, or what we used to call a farm, you cannot vMotion between those two things. So I've seen a lot of organizations that said, okay, well, we're going to create a data center for our admin group. We're going to create a data center for HR. And that's how they logically broke stuff up inside of their environment. And that simply won't scale when you start to get up there because everybody is segregated in their own silo. So build clusters of around 16 physical ESX hosts. You can go bigger or smaller than that if you want to. And then break the units up inside of there using resource pools, because then you can dynamically shift these things inside of your environment. And that goes back to that adaptive infrastructure that we were talking about, or that adaptive environment. So now let's talk about the processes a little bit. If you have the technology in place, it's going to run just fine. But if you don't have the processes to manage it, it's going to be a real pain to manage once you start to scale it out inside of your environment. So the first process that we usually do, or that we usually perform when we have a virtual infrastructure, is deploying virtual machines. Right? First thing you do, you get this nice new, brand new, shiny ESX box. You're like, ooh, boy, I'm going to deploy virtual machines on it. So you go out and you start deploying virtual machines, and at first we do it by hand. You know, just build it, connect it to the ISO image, next, finish. We built our operating system. Wow, that took a lot shorter time than in the physical world. And so you start to get used to that. But as you start to scale out, you realize, this really is a time-consuming process. I still have to sit here and build it. It's not as long as in the physical environment, but it still takes me a long time in the virtual environment. You know, it's still 12 minutes out of my day. I got to create three of these things. That's, you know, a whole hour and going on and on and on. And I need to patch it after the fact and make sure it's locked down from a security standpoint. So, you know, it's real kind of a pain by deploying these things by hand, and you get inconsistent results. Sally might build it one way. George might build it another way. Jim might build it another way inside of the environment. So you get inconsistent results. So think about using templates. If you haven't used templates already, go ahead and start building customized templates inside of your environment and deploying them that way. Templates deploy much, much faster. You get consistent images. You don't have to sit there and, you know, worry about it all the time. Think about where you're going to put your templates again. You know, you don't have to put it on this expensive fiber channel array that you have. Use NAS or use iSCSI. There are benefits to putting it on the fiber channel, though. If you put it on the fiber channel array, we actually issue block copy commands down to the storage processor inside of the environment. So all of the copying and all the deployment of the template happens inside of the array and happens much, much faster than copying it across the network or even, you know, copying it from disk to disk at that point in time. So fiber channel-based templates do deploy much, much faster than those other things. The downside of all this with templates is the administrator is still involved. I still get the 10 calls for the 10 servers. I still got to go in there and go next, and deploy the template. So the next step to this is really to strap a rocket to your butt and go flying off using self-provisioning. Self-provisioning is another thing that's out there. This is actually a script that was written by one of our technical marketing people over in EMEA. And he actually used our SDK to build a self-provisioning portal. So this is all open source code. You can go download it, play with it, use it inside of your environment. And basically what happens is you go out there, people get a selection of all the templates that are available inside of your environment. You click on one. Fill out your name, fill out your email address, fill out, you know, why you want to use this particular thing. You hit submit or place your order at this particular time. The administrator then gets an email that says, hey, you got a new order coming in. Open up the interface, say approve for all the different templates. It'll go out, grab another IP address, another host name at that point in time, or you can manually specify that information, and it'll deploy inside of your environment. So this self-provisioning portal, and there's more people that make self-provisioning portals besides just this one. Some of them were in our Solutions Exchange, which is now closed, but it was in there. So there are different self-provisioning portals, and this will really ease that process, right? It'll automate that entire process. So now you're just in charge of templates. You build these resource pools and give dedicated resources to it so that when the admin people come in, they get into the admin resource pool, and they can fill it up as much as they want, but then they start conflicting against just themselves. Or if finance comes in, they just start conflicting against themselves. If you're in more of a test and development environment and you want to use something very, very similar, we actually have VMware acquired a company called Akimbi, and we now have VMware Lab Manager, which just went into beta, where it'll provision whole harnesses of virtual machines. So you can say, I need a development harness that has this, and this. And it'll go ahead and provision those automatically for you, snapshot them, you know, take pictures of them, do all sorts of great things inside of the Lab Manager product. So that's another way to use self-provisioning in sort of a test and development environment. So next thing up is backing up your virtual machines. Plenty of people just put backup agents inside of the virtual machines, and that's perfectly good, but from a scalability standpoint, what happens when I start to kick off 10 backup jobs on top of one ESX host? typically that ESX host becomes overwhelmed because backup jobs are very disk intensive and very CPU intensive applications. So let's think about, you know, how this is going to scale out in our environment. Now in this particular instance, high bars are bad. That means it takes a lot of time or it's very complex inside of your environment. Low bars or no bars are very, very good. So for our particular case, we said, okay, what about agents in a virtual machine? There's basically three different ways you can do this. Again, agents in the virtual machine. You can back up the entire VMDK file, either using consolidated backup to do that. It will back up the entire VMDK file. Or third-party products. There's a lot of people in our Solutions Exchange that do this. Or you can use our product VMware Consolidated Backup to do file-level backup, but offloaded to another host. So at this point in time, we have a dedicated host which snapshots the virtual machines, mounts them, and then does file-level backup. And this greatly reduces the amount of processing power that's happening on the ESX host. The ESX host doesn't really participate in this at all. It goes directly to the array that's in your environment. So the time and complexity and size come down. So if you think about consolidated backup, it might be a little bit of a trick to set up at first, but the time to set it up is greatly worth it when you start moving forward and scaling out your environment. The other thing is providing high availability for these. Now that we've got our environment, we're backing it up, we need to provide high availability. So we need to get a process around this. And this particular slide shows that, you know, most of your servers don't require a lot of time or a lot of high availability. I mean, you have your entry-level server, which gives you about 99% availability in a physical world, and it doesn't cost very much. You go to a high availability server, it might have hot swap memory or RAID memory or something like that. It's going to cost you a little bit more, and it provides you, you know, another 9 of availability, so now you only have about 9 hours of downtime. You go over to failover clusters, they cost a little bit more because now you got twice as much stuff and shared storage inside of your environment. Fault-tolerant hardware costs more, and mirrored sites, you know, obviously cost the most. So think about how we can get a process around this to simplify it. And the answer is just to use virtual machines and VMware HA, right? Because most of your applications are in that, you know, kind of 99%, 99.9%. They can live with about 10 hours of failover. So by implementing VMware HA, we've greatly reduced the cost in all of this environment. Now we just have to worry about those, you know, outlying applications that last 1% or 2% of our application. So from a process standpoint, again, use the technology that you've bought, that you've purchased with, you know, this virtual infrastructure enterprise kit, and implement this stuff early on. Don't go back and try and retrofit it later because you're still wasting those cycles. And this goes back on to mention again VMware HA, and also there's third-party products. You know, think about those outlying applications. I still need to replicate data to a, you know, a mirrored site. There are third-party applications that snap right into a virtual infrastructure that doesn't require, you know, you to replicate at an array-based level. So the last part is people. Now that we have the processes in place, it's not very good unless we have people to manage the environment, right? So how many people do I need? How does it scale out in the environment? What do their skill sets need to be inside of the environment? What should I make for my team? And it's all about the team. It's all about picking the right team inside of your environment. So this is my particular favorite team, especially Mr. T, man. He's like, rah! Love to have him on a server consolidation project. So pick the right team. Pick people that have knowledge in these different areas. A lot of times you go in there and you might be, you know, particularly good in networking, or you might be particularly good in servers, but you don't know what a SAN is. You don't know, you know that networking has IP addresses, and you know that SANs have servers and or disks inside of them, but that's about it. So go and find those people and leverage them on your team. Now, I'm not saying go to your SAN group and suck out the SAN guy and he's on the VMware team now, because then your SAN guy is going to be like, hey, where'd all my people go? They're over there on the VMware team. But leverage them. Know them. Have a dedicated resource inside of that group that you can call. So you're not calling up and they're like, well, what's VMware? Why do we have to create a 250-gig LUN for you? You know, why do we do these metas? So figure out them and interface with that particular team. On the networking team, find somebody that's friendly so you don't have to go and explain why you're trying to do VLAN tagging and why they do failover and how they do failover. Get a core group of people together to actually manage your virtual infrastructure. So this core group doesn't need to be very big. Generally, from a sizing standpoint, we say about one administrator for every 10 ESX hosts, which is about 100 virtual machines if you think about it in a two CPU world. That seems to scale out pretty well. As you start to move up in your environment, you may figure out, okay, these people can manage a little bit more. I mean, I have a customer that has, you know, about 2,000 virtual machines inside of their environment over in Europe. And they have one person that administrates that entire environment. That's that one VMware person. You know, if they're sick, God help them, but at that point in time, they just have that core group. So they probably need to expand their core group a little bit, you know, provide some availability for them. But get that person with that deep VMware knowledge and train them and give them the resources that they need. And then go on and have the rest of your team that you can pull in from the SAN group and the networking group and have weekly meetings with them so that you understand where you're going, how you're going to expand your virtual infrastructure, when you're going to expand your virtual infrastructure, so that they can plan in the SAN environment and the networking environment to provide those resources for you. The other thing is get the knowledge, right? Give them the knowledge that they need. Send them to training. I know it's going to cost you money, but send them to training that does add value back to your organization. Get them VCP certified. They have more resources. They have more knowledge. It's going to make your environment scale much, much easier so that you don't hit all these hiccups along the way. You know, they might have, for instance, say, oh, we're going and we've scaled out our environment, and now all of a sudden, like Brad said, we have this path thrashing issue. And you're like, what's a path thrashing issue? I have no idea what this is. You know, I don't hit this in the physical world. Why am I hitting this in a VMware world? Well, with that training, they'll understand what path thrashing is and how to fix that inside of their environment with those active passive arrays. So get them certified. Get them trained. The other thing is to ask for help when you need it. Right? Not all of us are experts in all these different areas. We have hundreds and hundreds of value-added resellers around the world, value-added consulting organizations. So go ahead and leverage that technology. Bring them in-house, and that will make your environment scale much, much, much faster. There was a study done, and I forgot the numbers on this, on how much money was saved or how much greater success people have had by leveraging consulting inside of their organizations across the board, not just with VMware, but across the board on all these different projects. And it's some astronomical money in the trillions of dollars that has been saved by, you know, people buying consulting services. So go and leverage those resources when you need them. So this is kind of the wrap-up. You know, think about those three pillars, those people, the processes, and the technology. You have to have all those lined up ahead of time so you can scale out your environment. Think about long-term growth. Don't think about the short-term growth. Think about, you know, if I had all the money in the world and my company expands and we explode, where are we going to be in 10 years? You know, how could I manage inside of my environment 10,000 ESX servers and 200,000 virtual machines? Could I manage that inside of my environment? You know, God help you if you get there. I'd love it. You know, give me a call. I'm going to transfer your sales territory. But, you know, think about that. Put the processes in place early so you don't have to go back and retrofit them and spend all that money. So again, select the right technology for the job, plan for that growth, get your processes documented, go back and pick your A team, pick the people that are going to work on this technology, get them trained, get the value, and then build your environment from these pillars so it stands the test of time. So now I'll end it with a couple of questions. We actually powered through that one. You get out of here a little bit early. 45 minutes, that's pretty good. So if you have any questions, just raise your hand. We'll go through it. So the question was, I spoke earlier about breaking your virtual machines into logical units and kind of expand on that. So what I mean is, don't like if you create a cluster of several ESX hosts, there's two different ways to do it. You can just have a cluster for you know, all those ESX resources for finance, you create another cluster for HR, or you can create one cluster and one resource pool inside of that, or one cluster, and then break it down with resource pools, which are kind of logical subdivisions where they can have dedicated resources. It works much, much better with resource pools inside of a cluster because then you can dynamically expand and shrink those resources pools inside of that environment. Whereas if I just started off with clusters, I'd have to remove the host from a cluster and then add it back into another cluster. I'd have to go ahead and shut down the host or actually put it into maintenance mode in order to move it from cluster to cluster. That's downtime for your virtual machines, or you know, moving your virtual machines off the environment. Whereas if finance just called up and said, here's another $1,000, give me more resources, I just go in, edit resources, boom, you're bumped up, done. You know, so from a scalability and a process type of functionality, it's much easier to create those larger clusters and then subdivide them using those resource pools and those dedicated resources. Another thing to kind of expand upon that, and this really isn't for breaking it into logical units, but when you're starting to scale out your environment, you're going to be adding virtual machines. So let's say we had a cluster and we had three ESX servers in it, and we created, or even one ESX server, and we created a virtual machine for our finance organization. So they gave us some money, we created them a virtual machine, they're running, they're happy, they're, man, this thing is the fastest thing I've ever used inside of my entire environment, right? They're loving it, And then you add another virtual machine and another virtual machine and another virtual machine. So we may have 5 VMs on the box at that point in time. Now finance is like, what happened to my application? It was running really, really fast, and now it's running really, really slow. Where's the performance bottleneck? And it really wasn't a performance bottleneck. You just gave them something, you know, they gave them a great expectation with all this performance boost, when what you should have maybe started off with was put a limit on that virtual machine. So actually edit the resource, the CPU resources, and maybe when you create a virtual machine, limit it at 20% of the resources of the box. So when they go create another virtual machine, they don't have performance degradation. Limit it at 20%. Another virtual machine, limit it at 20%. Right? And then I can start to ratchet up those limits at that point in time, and I can do that live while virtual machines are running. So it scales much, much better at that point in time. You don't have people calling up all the time like, hey, you know, a month ago I was running really good, now I'm running really kind of crappy inside of my environment. You don't get a black eye, you know, at that point in time. So it's just how you manage it, and that process for managing it and scaling it out. The limits are good things, and the resource pools are good things. Just don't forget you put the limit on there, right? Because if you ever need it or troubleshooting it in the future, you're like, ah, my limit, that's where it went. Some more questions? No? Okay. Well, if anybody else has any questions up here, otherwise, enjoy your time left with VMworld for the next 15 minutes. And come back next year. The presentations are up on the web right now. Yep, this exact presentation is on the web right now. So you can download it, get those links that you need to as well. The address for the sessions, that I don't know. It's under the session builder. So if you go to the session builder, you can download it on the website there or get the link from, I think, VMTN. Going through VMTN, that's what Brad says.